Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of March 2025. I'm your host Robert, and I'm gradually starting to think that my general vicinity of work is extremely cursed ground. Ask me how I know. And with me I have...
Here's a spoiler for you. Coachella already sucks this year, and it'll suck again next weekend. There, I save you a lot of time and a lot of money.
And...
Look, you ain't Washington Studio, they're not mine. Just saying.
Huh. Why are these glowing blue?
Let's see.
Oh, hey, my knee doesn't feel so weird anymore.
Let's see.
I could take a look at what's happening.
Now, I could run from the cuffs like Axel Roberto, but then again, I realized I run like Marshall Cuso.
I wish I could run. That would probably make me cool or something.
So yeah, with both cover side effects and Lazarus, I can say that the infant pharmaceuticals, just go with that.
I mean, it could be worse. I mean, one of those shows could have an unfortunately very, very topical line about a stock market crash or something.
Nobody knows what's going on. Shut the fuck up, everyone.
Yeah, this was made. Yeah, this is in 2024. Nobody's looking at this shit, unfortunately.
Like, okay, yes, I understand that animation takes a lot of time, and that shit was probably in the can. Who knows how long before this? I'm just saying, I can't think of a worse example of perfect timing.
It's almost like they knew the public at large was going to be very, very, very stupid.
Yeah, and they continue to be very stupid, and whiny, and yelly, and just everything... It's everything in between. Just fuck.
Yeah, truly cursed ground. And if you're wondering why I made that cold open reference earlier, I know we don't normally do super, like, you know, hey, how's everything been going intros on the roundups, but I need to tell you some shit that happened today. So, like, I'm just sitting there at work. I'm helping train a new guy. And all of a sudden, a bunch of my coworkers just start, like, cluttering around each other and discussing something. I don't really know what. It just kind of sounds like some shit happened. I don't really know what. Anyway, then I go off to the bathroom. I flick open Blue Sky. And it says, oh, there was a plane crash in the city where I work. And so I'm looking it up and I'm just like, oh, that's like less than a half hour away. Oh, okay. So we're just doing this now. And for other reasons that I'm not sure I'll give too much detail on, other miscellaneous curse things have been happening within the general vicinity. Ugh. And people wonder why I spend all my time making weird jokes about deathcore. Because it's better than thinking about this. But this isn't a Real Life is Extremely Cursed podcast, and it never will be. I mean, why not? Yeah, well, we could make it a Beverly Hillbillies podcast instead.
No. Oh, we would get the timing wrong. Again.
It's even longer now. My God, the madman. I only just got to the halfway point, people. Just got halfway. Anyway, this is the Decibel Boost podcast roundup for March of 2025. And there was quite a lot going on. In fact, we very routinely joked from episode to episode that March was going to have definitely some notable high-profile things happening. And happen they did. For better, for worse, and also just for the plain weird. So, let's not waste any more time, and do what we always do at the beginning of this stuff by running down just some of the more noteworthy things that dropped during this past month. As always, we're going to take it week by week, starting, of course, with March 7th, 2025. Your notable highlights include the second studio album from Spirit Box with Tsunami Sea, the newest studio album from Whitechapel with Hymns in Dissonance, From Jethro Tull, we had a new album called Curious Remnant. You know, if you're old enough to collect Social Security or something. From Toki Monsta, we had a new project called Eternal Reverie. From Young Boy Never Broke Again, we had more leaks. And, of course, the big album of the week, clearly, The Wiggles, with their country album, Wiggle Up, Giddy Up.
Yeehaw, partner!
From Jason Isbell, we had Foxes in the Snow. From Jenny, I believe of Blackpink fame, we had Ruby. And, of course, we had the newest studio album from Lady Gaga with Mayhem, which... I want to point out something. For some reason... Only now is my TikTok algorithm trying to show me abracadabra dance trend videos from like a couple months ago. I feel like y'all are a little bit delayed there, but it is what it is. Anyway, moving on to the week of March 14th, 2025, we had The Body collaborating with Intensive Care on Was I Good Enough? From Warbringer, we had the album Wrath and Ruin. From Coheed and Cambria, we had Vaxis, Act 3, The Father of Make-Believe. From Stephen Wilson, we had a brand new solo project, The Overview. From Nels Klein of Wilco fame, that name might actually come up later, wink, we had a Concentric Quartet. There was a collab project between Currency and Harry Fraud with Never Catch Us. Of course, Clipping dropped their new album, Dead Channel Sky. And, unfortunately, we had a surprise drop from Playboi Carti with I Am Music. And I write the songs.
Well, shouldn't it have been called AI Write Music? Or Am Music, or whatever the hell it's called? Because you're not beating those allegations, Carti.
Oh, Lord, don't tell me.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
God damn, you suck. Anyway. Then, of course, on March 19th, just kind of in between Fridays, we had Flying Lotus with the soundtrack to his latest feature film, Ash. Anyway, moving on to March 21st, 2025, there was the new Cradle of Filth album with The Screaming of the Valkyries, for some fucking reason. From the Indian metal band Bloodywood, we had their new album, New Delhi. Get it? Like, new metal, new Delhi, heh? from the jazz metalers Imperial Triumphant, we had their new album, Gold Star. From Bishop Nehru, we had a new project called Now or Never. Of course, there was the Rush 50 anthology box set from Rush. And the collaborative efforts of Selena Gomez and Benny Blanco with I Said I Love You First. Then moving on to, finally, March 28th, 2025, we had, from Deaf Heaven, the new album Lonely People with Power. From the band Alien Weaponry, their newest album Terra. From Arch Enemy, we had Blood Dynasty. You know, I still like Arch Enemy for some reason. Memphis Mayfire with Shapeshifter, for some fucking reason. Under Oath with The Place After This One, for some fucking reason. Now you might be asking yourself, did I repeat that joke from last time? You can't prove anything. from Backwash, we had their new album, Only Dust Remains. From Boldy James and Ant Beats, we had Homage. From Lil Durk, there was Deep Thoughts. From Nav, we had On My Way to Rexdale. Yukimi of Little Dragon with her new album, For You. The band Destroyer dropped a new project with Dan's Boogie. Spelling, with three L's, dropping her newest album, Portrait of My Heart. And, of course, last but certainly not least, the most important album of this past month, the musical comeback of Will Smith with Based on a True Story!
Oh, God.
Okay.
See, because I think I'm funny. But anyway, this is not a Will Smith podcast, and it never will be. This is now the part where we all offer in some miscellaneous takes about some of the albums on this list, and almost most definitely some things I forgot, because a few things always slip through the cracks. That's just kind of how it is. I'm just one guy, after all, so I don't necessarily pay attention to all the things. Just like 82.5% of the things. Don't ask me how I arrived at that figure. So, as always, we throw it over to Alex to help get things started.
Okay, and the general feeling I have with everything right now is just long, exasperated sigh. Just in general. Shit sucks. It's not fun. But at least we have music of various kinds in which I have one rule. No albums over 14 tracks because my God, I cannot do long albums anymore. I just can't. If you're going to make it a long album, make it like 6 tracks and like the songs are like 10 minutes each. Okay. Okay. Rule number 2. No more than 10 releases for me because holy crap, March was big. Like I had to cut some stuff out because I just did not have all the time in the world to listen to everything that came out. So, yeah, I didn't get to everything. Okay, so here are my side listens, the stuff that I sort of listened to but didn't get too deep into. The Rush 50 compilation. It's a compilation of Rush songs. Of course I'm going to listen to that. And I can't confirm, Garden Road is on it. Thank you.
Woo!
It's very nice. Although, not a lot from the Clockwork Angels album on here, which that kind of bummed me out. That's an underrated gem of an album. Same with, you know, the 80s stuff, Grace Under Pressure and To Hold Your Fire especially, but at least Time Stand Still is on there. So yeah, I like packages like this that have, you know, a mix of contemporary quote unquote greatest hits and some rare cuts, again, like the early songs, like pre Neil Peart era, John Rutsey era. That's always fun. Though I do have one complaint about how it was released on Apple Music. Because there are clear music label licensing issues, not every album, every song came in here in the one package. It came through as tracks from other albums that some of the tracks were released on, which is just annoying. I don't like having tracks grayed out because it's on a different label or whatever. Just put it all in one collection. I don't want to go to a playlist for all of it to hear it in sequence, but whatever. Now my whole iTunes library is just messed up because I have like 15 different Rush album arts on here. It's just a mess. But that's just a little nitpick. Okay, Whitechapel. Like we all know the Jared Alonchi joke. Don't you just want to criticize Whitechapel? I do have to criticize this a bit. It's not bad. It's the Whitechapel album. It's actually quite good. But it's a bit too much of the old style deathcore on offer after what I thought was an excellent 1-2 punch from The Valley and Kin. Like, those were more melodic and experimental with the stylings, and I liked that. This is just a straight-up deathcore assault. It's good for those who enjoy that kind of style, but for me, it's just too much of one and not enough of the other. Not knocking it. It's just not really what I was looking forward to. Oh, well. Okay, here's a new album that I'm feeling a crack in from a band called The Cost, who some of you may know if you follow stuff on YouTube, as the band by featuring one El Estepario Siberiano, the masterful drum god. If you don't know who he is, what are you doing? Just go watch his videos and be amazed at what he can do with just two hands.
See, every time I see him on TikTok, I immediately think of that joke, my pronoun is he, because I could never be him.
Yes, he is quite good. And, yeah, the album is called Doppler Affection. Not sure what it actually means, but, it's downtuned prog metal. And it's downtuned prog metal with a Surge Tankian feature in the album, which is always fun. Okay, I don't think you're going to find anything quote-unquote new out of it. But, hey, I like Down 2 to Prog Metal, so that checks a box off for me. Now for another crack-filling. That sounds very lewd, but, you know, whatever.
Heyo!
Man with a Mission. They put out an EP, 15, Roman numeral XV. It's four original tracks. It's kind of Linkin Park-ish beats to it. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, it has that kind of beats, has some record scratches. One track has Amen Break in it, so we can add that to the pile of Amen Break samples. Yeah. Good tracks. Yeah, the live tracks are a nice touch to it. It's basically half EP, half mini live album. It's alright, you'll hear it in the playlist. And from Bloody Wood, their new album. Do you like new metal with more of an Indian flair to it? Then this is the album for you. It's both exotic and aggressive, and it gents too. Everybody wins. Now, full disclosure, I don't understand the Hindi language at all, which means a lot of the lyrics are just lost on me because I don't know what they're saying. I don't understand the language. So I'm basing this on just melody and riff and groove, and it's still a fun time. And now for the main albums that I had to really sink my teeth into. First, Spelling. I'll start with the new Spelling album, Portrait of My Heart. The best thing I can say about this is that it sounds like a late 90s adult contemporary R&B album, and I really like that kind of music. It's what I grew up on. But it's also crossed with a bit of grungy alternative rock in parts. I also like that kind of music as well. It's a really solid blend of styles that makes for a good vibe album. Bit of a stylistic change from her last album, but still like up there in terms of quality. So yeah, very good. Okay, I learned my lesson from not paying attention to the Blood Incantation album last October. When there's a wild and out there metal album released, I need to talk about it. So I will do that with this new album from Imperial Triumphant, Gold Star. This album is a mad dash of insanity, and I adore it. Mostly for the mixing. Like, the drums, they sound very unpolished in a good way. I'm just so used to hearing the same type of compressed and processed drum sounds and drum samples, cough, cough, octane core. So hearing drums like this that sound a bit more raw, like it's being captured in the room, I'm all about that. Sounds great. And yeah, it's very, very wild and frantic and just crazy. But hey, it's a good blend of styles that has a bit of black metal in it that I don't hate. And you know me, that's a tough feat to come across. I'm not a big black metal guy. Everything just sounds bleh to me, but this is good. This is good. I learned my lesson. I'm not going to forget about it. Like, if I had to redo my top albums of last year, yeah, Blood Incantation would be somewhere in there.
Nice.
Okay, how am I going to do this for the last three? What the hell? Lady Gaga, Mayhem. I fear the first couple tracks were a bit of a misnomer for the rest of the album. It's not as synth-heavy as Disease and Abracadabra turned out to be. It's more, I don't know how else to put it, Andrew Watt-styled. This album is just chock full of Andrew Watt-isms in production and songwriting, in the just oversaturation of guitars in the mix, and for some people they like that. For me, I'm just not a big fan of Andrew Watt's production style, and for the record, I'm spoiled. I grew up on the production and songwriting styles of Babyface and Diane Warren and David Foster and Max Martin. That's what I grew up with. That's what I know. And what I've heard from Andrew Watt's style of production and songwriting is that he only has a couple of tricks. I don't know. It's just the guitar sounded a bit too in the mix. Like, I need to be pulled back a bit from what's supposed to be just radio pop. I don't know. Just something about the way it all sounds when he's in charge sounds kind of dry. Like, in some cases it works. In here, it's not bad, per se. I'm not going to call this a bad album, but I can't call this, like, the best album since, like, The Fame Monster. Some tracks hit up to that level, but the rest of it, I'm going to be honest, is just sort of in one ear, out the other. Not terrible, but not super memorable. I think that might be worse. It's still a good album, but that's kind of all I can really say about it. It's just a good album, and I firmly believe Die With A Smile was put on the album at the very last minute, and it does not work! I will die on that hill with a smile. Yes, I'm funny because my humor is dry, like the desert. Ben Shapiro's wife. Got it. Yeah. All right, now for the two albums I was looking forward to the most this month. Yeah, I'll start with this one. Spirit Box, Tsunami Sea. To the people complaining that they're not doing enough to push through and crafting new sounds, that they're not doing enough on here, what are you all even talking about? Did we listen to the same album? I don't think we did.
Clearly not.
Like, this is Spirit Box. This is what they do. Yes, it's processed, it's low-tuned, it's chugging, it's in-your-face, it's also a little pop-centric. They blend it together, that's their style. Either say, this is an improvement in thematic approach over Eternal Blue, in a very good way. Like, everything on here, it just feels like it blends a little bit better. There's a little more cohesion in the track list and sequencing. There's just a lot of really, like, solid tracks on here. You have, you know, Perfect Soul, that's the main radio rock, quote-unquote, song. Only going to hear it on, like, satellite radio, because I don't know if FM radio even knows Spirit Box exists, but, you know, whatever. So, some of the more out-there tracks, like No Loss of Love and Crystal Roses, that is fun experimentation. Y'all want something different? There you go. Didn't like it? Well, you have bangers like Fata Morgana on here and Soft Spine. Like, go ham on those tracks, why don't you? Deep End is a great closing track. It's very ethereal and emotional and just, it cuts. It cuts in a very good way. But yeah, this is going to be on my list somewhere in the end of the year. I just know it. And finally, two tracks, 41 minutes, one man, and a backing band. Stephen Wilson, The Overview. A two-track space rock odyssey, all as a wide exploration of how microscopically minuscule our place in the universe truly is. I mean, I don't know what else to say. It's two tracks. They're very long. They're very sweet-oriented. There is more of a focus on, like, prog rock styles as opposed to the more electronic sound we've heard on the Harmony Codex and the Future Bites, which I like. I bought the vinyl. I played it on my turntable. It sounds fantastic. The very fun, wild exploration of sound that's kind of been missing for the last little while. Like, not since, oh god, it was The Raven That Refused to Sing was 12 years ago. Fuck!
Good lord.
Time is not real, and neither are my hopes and dreams. Or my stock options.
Hey!
I'm just kidding. I never had any to begin with.
I'll drink to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know how I can put this in the playlist, but some of the tracks on this album are broken up into sections. There's a second part of it that's just the individual, you know, song sections, so maybe I'll figure that out in some way. It'll make zero sense out of context, but, you know, I'll try my best. But Yeah, there you go. Those are my 10 releases for the month. And that's my limit every month going forward. I cannot do more than 10. I just don't have the time or the energy or the wherewithal or the focus or the anything. I didn't even get to go to the record store this past month. There were some things I wanted to get, but I didn't. Maybe in April I'll try again.
Oh God, yeah, record store days this month, I think.
It's actually, by the time this is out, it'll already happened. It's Saturday.
Jesus, I thought it was next weekend. What the fuck?
Next weekend's Easter.
So why can't both happen on the same day? Fucking put plastic eggs in vinyl records or something. I don't know.
if only the Easter Bunny handed out albums instead of eggs full of chocolates. Which makes me wonder, does the Easter Bunny lay the chocolate eggs, and if so, where does it come out? What are we actually eating?
Ugh, I don't want to think about that.
Dry humor, folks. It never gets old.
Why can't you give us cash instead?
Yeah, that's only the Tooth Fairy. Yet they don't give you shit for wisdom teeth. I would know. All I got was just a bloody mouth for 3 days.
Yeah, all they give you is Novocaine and God's wishes.
And a lot of anesthesia.
That too.
Yeah,
so that's all I got, and hopefully by the time April's over, I won't have to make some omissions, because, there were some things I wanted to get to, but I didn't. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's fair. There are a few things I didn't get around to myself. I have to backfill that in later, but anyway, with that intro section out of the way, let's continue onwards with what Mark brings to the table.
In case you missed earlier, I was gonna say, I think my month at least my month or my now is, you know, I'm not gonna go into personal shit, let's not do that, but yeah, I kind of both though. I think around this year I'm gonna try not to go for more albums as much, cause sometimes I either don't be just doing less or just end up putting just in the kingdom bars. That's why I think I'm going to do the whole below 10 thing. It's like, after I get the 10, I'm just going to stop. Like, so I got like, basically like eight albums to talk about. And the first one I'm talking about is the one that you kind of expect me to talk about in some of this month. Or I guess the biggest month, the biggest one, at least for me, that's from Clipping. That being Dead Channel Sky. So you're going this album, which of course I got the theme going. We're being more, you know, cyberpunk, just like how the last two albums got mostly horror theme going for it. And I will say this. I mean, I gave a lot of listen to it like over and over again, see like how I feel about it, and I say that it's a good one. It's not been the last two ones that I listened to, but I will say overall, it's a good album. I get out of the intro where it goes like it looks me like name kids and all, like, okay, you did it right, okay, you know. In a way about it, but the bravery of song, and a doubt about it, wants you to contribute in the sentence infinite incident. When you spin it on a discord, it's dissonant, skipping bits, a killer might compete in the right arena, which, okay! Okay, that's just a lyric, especially with the discord lyric. And then, of course, in the intro, it pulls you in this vortex, which gets that. That sound we all know from the 90s, that first internet sound, the dial-up sound, as in, you know, the sound. Okay, in the core, it's basically vision, like, you know, Basically, Calhoun made the internet a tool for within the masses to make people feel worthless and stiff-footed as a person. Like, basically, especially for the second track, Undominated, which, of course, you got a quick lyrics like, Avity had to make out the body status quo. Avatar opportunity is created the capital, and no cap, honesties are infinitely more valuable when they think and they fat and that's ugly and unfashionable. Kill yourself. I'm the one only. Yeah, you basically sort of like, oh, shit. It does like describe like this dystopian digital world as in like a, whereas like, get to sit, like, whereas like the lack of excitement is the status quo society. People think that basically a bunch of fat fucks and all that shit. Everybody mostly making suicidal thoughts, which when you've been on the internet, that's there too. And I mean, and it goes got this atmosphere filled with a lot of ads and billboards that say how like no one sees the stars, it's just, well, the earth is now just one big internet in the sky. That does sound fucking depressing. Like, of course, the singles, you know, with Change the Channel, it's just, you're still pretty good. We still a pretty good high track. Definitely very high octane type of sound to it, and Run It, which is more. I would say that's more, you know, influenced by Detroit techno which I think we talked about earlier. Big on tracks like they got this instrumental track called Simple Degradation Plus One to 13. The feature is a bit panic, a computer music collective, which got this digital droning, this honest sound, it's kind of nice. Like, they do the same thing with the Plux 14 to 18 a few tracks later. It's also the track Cold I like, which got this blend of, you know, cyberpunk and streetwise aesthetics when it comes to avatars, beasts, and talking cold, which you kind of get was. And look at the, rapping is, you know, it's good, like, okay, on the rapping, like, it's really good with the V, because he's, like I said before, like, when he's rapping fast, he is telling a story, he's just going very fast, which, again, he says something interesting, and maybe say, I want to pay attention to this guy. Of course, got Dodger, which goes into that, you know, aspect of cyberpunk aesthetic, which story about female analysts discovering a virus in the data system by this robot named Dodger. Of course, it goes this, you know, this dystopian, futuristic love story, because she falls for him, but he said, well, the hell, I become one too. Basically, I become willing too. Like, and of course, it got this another instrumental, Mollus, which I looked up. It is a small hammer-shaped bone in the middle of the ear that transmits sound vibrations from the eardrum to the incus. And here's the cacophony of sounds when tuning the guitar. And then you hear somebody tuning the guitar, because the way it looks, it's like, okay. Not only it comes from, and since you mentioned this guy's name, Niels Klein. Yeah, he does some work here too.
Hey, told you that would come back.
Yep. All right. And then we go to a familiar type of track that Clinton's known for, Scams, which is basically, you know, sitting around the dominant woman that would probably, you know, that you don't want to cross. Like, you know, tracks like, I want to say, like, Neve Campbell, like 96 Neve Campbell in the last album, something like that, basically. The woman that you don't want to cross. Like, the feeling that is rapper Tia No More. Yeah, that's another ghost by Ed. And I gotta say, he does some good, because I love what she's supposed to say. Like, when she go me in the cornerstone, Michelin star, doesn't matter. She's a factor in the train gang, dope gang, tech gang, dope gang, no name spoke. Get it right, she manages the funds, handling guns, pressing the ones, she's running the club in the VIP, all eyes, see the diamonds on her tongue. As she goes, making the enemies, whatever the G's, beginning on squeeze. Okay, and they, and of course, just, you know, just, you know, just telling them like a sort of punk record, like, just like some, you know, some very like, you know, like, you know, like bitches of, you know, well known super punk type of shit, like, Boot Organ, damn, Boot Organ. Why I say, what the hell am I saying? Boot Organ has this very trippy, off kilter, glitchy type of sound, and this ends up with the title, the reference to the bias, the moving motions, and mental states at will, well, keyboards. Basically, reference to that, reference to all the name Flip K. Dick, as in, you know, as in, you know this guy, you see, you know this guy, you know what he wrote, you know what inspires what he wrote, you know, yeah, you know, Blade Runner, all that shit, yeah, you know, yeah, some of y'all don't know this shit. And then on the Polaroids, most of them getting the, some of them getting the past, like, hey, look at Polaroids, you know, the pic, you know, those pics as in those large cameras where you take a pic and there's a photo camera and you wave it to you see the photo, you know, that type of pic, you know, you get on the camera talking about, yeah, you know, that type of camera, yeah. Yeah. Then we're old. Oh, and I mean, oh, also Madcap. Yeah, short season song, I will say the short songs here, like, I will say, like, usually when I say, oh, this should be longer, I'm like, no, it's fine here. Not to be out complaining, I was like, you know what, it's fine here. I'm good with this line, this link. The one track that I think I keep going back to, and maybe I shouldn't, but I should because I like the song, is Mirror Shades Part 2, which I don't know what Part 1 is at, because I don't know if it's a track I missed, but yeah. Got this groove, got this hypnotic beat, got the feature verse from Cartel Mantras. It's all something to do with play in mostly rave clubs, and as I mentioned, mirror shades. Yeah, you know, the glasses that we wear that you see, that you, basically mirror glasses, you know, you basically, in other words, fake the Matrix. That's what you're thinking. Like, thinking you're looking more at the Lawrence Fishburne, and he's staring at you, you're staring at, but yeah, you get it. And of course, we'll say, going back to the track of One Home Warrior, that's a track with A$AP Rock, which is an exploration of digital escapism to virtual worlds. Like, you be the hero, see the girl, make the world your world, meet the new spy. And then, sort of like, it's basically, like, you know, how, like, then, like, I know on the song, like, A$AP Rock goes on the search of digital identity, and then comes to the V, where it's like, they pull back the wolf in your ass, saying, these spirits are your own, like, just because you make it doesn't mean it's yours. It's kind of like Swan on a Line Away. Well, the abridged version. A better version. Hmm. Yeah. And the core, and the outro acts what happened. This all the trouble, corruption, bullshit in the world. Basically, all this got this very minimalist sort of with these German bass sounds, which you figured that would end out the album. It actually doesn't. There's a hidden track, and there's a hidden track on here called Jack Zero, which tend to be the engine of the story series, referencing, you know, other songs in the series, which it circles back to the first track. It's basically like a loop, is what I'm saying. So basically, I know it's, you know, somewhere on YouTube. I just forgot the name of that video they put it in, but yeah, that track loops back to the beginning of the album. I say this is one of the hardest reviews I try to look into, because, like, I mean, I like the album. Like, it's a good album. It's my favorite, not really, but I will say they got the references down, right? They got the imagery. They got the fact that they got the songs are not that bad. Like, again, a track I like is Mirror Shades, which I can definitely bump to back and forth. But yeah, like, this had this, you know, 90s sci-fi dystopian punk sci-fi movie soundtrack vibe to it, which I kind of like, because I like music in those movies. But yeah, I can say that this is one that I say that if you should listen first and you say, should I buy it or not? Do I want to own it or not? It's one of those type of series. Like, you know what? I might pick this one out sooner or later. Like, it's not a rush. It's like, if you were to buy it, yeah, wouldn't be that bad. Still a good check. I mean, it's still a good pick. So, yeah. Okay, now that out of the way, now go to the rest of the albums. So, yeah, album number 5 from Boldy James. Homage for Ant Beat. Anyway, you're wondering who the hell's Ant Beat. He's on produced for the likes of other people like Lil Baby, 42 Doug, Future, Eminem, Jeezy, and a lot of, he's born a rapper of trap music, basically. This is basically more of the Detroit trap album, it's one of that Detroit bass trap sound, I don't think it's mainstream, but it's not mainstream like this album he did back in January, the second one he did. This is more like that niche Detroit trap shit, he has one of the beats and something too shabby, and I gotta say, they could definitely hit. Although I will say the one song I like that I keep going back to, the one track is called, and I'm not kidding with this, Timothy McVeigh. Yes, the track is called Timothy McVeigh. And the reason why I like this is because the sample used in there, the sample, I'm not gonna say what it is, but let's just say it's like the 007. Not that theme, but a theme to one of their movies from the 80s. If you know your theme songs to their movies, you'll know. The reason why I'm not saying what it is, because I'm not about to sample snitch, I don't know if they get the clearance or not, because I ain't trying to have nobody, I don't have nobody say like, you snitched on this, I'm not doing that, but yeah, I like that song. And, like I said, that was a whole, like, again, I wouldn't call it slightly mainstream because it has trap beats. I don't think it's going for that mainstream appeal on this record. Like, it's a fair listen. I probably rank it as this, maybe the bottom, at the bottom two next to the Permanent Ink one. But this one is still a good listen. And considering I got another coming up this month, and another one coming in May. He might give me more records coming up this year, unless somebody beat him to it and just say, well, you know. All right, next up, Currency and Harry Fraud Never Catch Up. So it's about Currency and Harry Fraud project. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna check that out too. And of course, last time I checked, it was for about Vices, which I pretty much liked. I think it's on my list that year. And this one is more album length. Like, it's like 34 minutes and 12 songs. It's a good listen. Like, the beats are laid back, exquisite, coming from fraud, and Crazy sounds good. And Crazy sounds good on them, which I was listening to. They do some good beats on here. We'll look at the tracks online here, which includes Dream Machines, Airport Industries, Money Magnet, and my favorite being Zach Morris Phone. Yes, there's a track called Zach Morris Phone. Yeah, and although I will say, I know this might hurt him a little bit. I mean, like some of the tracks I listen to, my favorites, they all got Fierce Autumn, features on them. Like, I know Dream Machine has Primo Rice, Airport Industry got Wiz Khalifa on them, which I bet the one time he had one of the few times that Whiskey Sun's going on the record, which I feel like he's more when he's less mainstream than when he does, which is like, yeah, I kind of like him when he does shit like this. And then this April Industry, and then this Money Man, which got Calling the Machine and the Wrong Streets. And on Zach Morris' phone, my favorite track, it has a feature guest from Bruiser Wolf.
Hey,
I definitely fuck with this verse as well, because the way he goes on the beat is like, once you hear that beat, it's like, this is a nice fucking beat. Like, yeah. I can definitely say this is another fine project coming from these two. All right, this one will be short and sweet to the point. Flying Lotus with Ash. And considering this for something or a movie that I have not seen yet, because, well, I haven't seen it yet, and I'm pretty sure since I know this might come to Shudder or some other streaming service, because it's sort of like that, or I think, because I know it's part of that shit. But yeah, this one, the score, like, I do hear, like, you know, like a standard Follow album, like, there's a lot of heavy synth and eerie scapes from, like, got that 80s sci-fi sound, like a Vangelis or Carpenter, like, and then it's like one track that I will say, this sort of something that will come with a Follow album, like, one track is called Greebles. I know it's from the film, it might be, I mean, it sounds like something I want to hear from your dad. I mean, that's how I feel it, but we'll say that it's a decent listen. I mean, maybe whenever I see the movie soon, I will appreciate it more, but that's all I got for this. Okay, we got Toki Monster and Total Reverie. It's been a long time since I listened to an album of hers. The last one that came out was in 2020. And it was around that time of 2020, but yeah, like what I said for the album, like, from what I get from Toki Monster, like, I know it's gonna be a blend of, you know, the Tronica dance hip hop on the more alternative weirder side of things, and yeah, that's what I got from it, and it's pretty good. Like, of course you got that track that you did with Anderson .Paak and Rakeville with On Something, which we talked about like a few months ago. They got tracks like Switch It and On Junior Life. The one I like the most is Corazon / Death by Disco Part 2, which, again, I keep going back to. Like, it does have that, you know, very, like, very dancey vibe, that dancey vibe too, which I sort of like. But yeah, this is something like, you know, another decent album. I can definitely go along with this. Yukimi, yes, the one I've been interested in for Little Dragon. I mean, Yukimi from Little, you know, of Little Dragon for you. And yeah, I got much to say on this one, but I will say that, like I always said about Yukimi, I like her sultry voice, I like the way she sings. Even though Last Little Dragon records ain't been hitting me as of much, like, hearing the presence is just like, hearing the presence on the record is like, yeah, I got that. Song's got a very laid back and chill vibe, voice as strong as ever, and it's a great listen. I can definitely recommend it, yeah. Alright, next up is another underground hip hop project. Willie the Kid and Real Batman. The name heard before. With Midnight. Yep, it's another hip hop producer, rapper collab, and with this one, out of all the street, this one's not too shabby. Out of all the street hip hop collabs that I heard before, like, it's not breaking any ground, but I don't think it's enough, but I can listen to it. Like, the raps are fine, the beats are good, which I can fuck with. Like, where tracks like one called Maxwell's Pico Collection, Light It Up. Yeah, but yeah, but yeah, it was like, this is, ooh, yeah, I would say this is a pretty good, It's a pretty good, usual street hip hop collab project. And last, yeah, I'm talking about Will Smith.
Hey.
This is the first me talking about Will Smith and his rapping, which, okay, look, I'm above it, because, like, we like some stuff from here way back in the day. Like, we like Summertime. I kind of like stuff like Miami, which I thought, no, okay, when old Chico remember Miami, he's been several times. Maybe kind of lame to your standards, but it's a decent pop rap joint. Well, to what was up back then, but now with this album, which let me remind you, it's been 20 years since his last album. Yeah, 20 years since Lost and Found, and well, you already got the Chainwreckers thing, there's treatment of that. And of course, how not now? How's it begin? Well, I think it begins. After that thing that happened 3 years ago, I'm not gonna be doing this because those folks have been dead for a while. It's just stay dead. But yeah, I knew you were talking about that shit. I knew you were gonna break it at a point like this. But I will say for the rest of the album, like, he does got that very, maybe not pop rap, but more like very trying to sound epic, inspirational, trying to sound big, inspirational, and sweeping rap, but it's mostly the way that's used in a movie theater or a montage, like basically one of those songs that just to be epic and all that shit, but kind of sounds kind of generic in a way, or at least not as popular as you thought it was, but it's like, okay, they're doing what they were doing, like, of course, songs like Beautiful Scars, Bulletproof, You Can Make It, on the sound of the song was coming, and they're not terrible songs, they're just like, they hear what they're doing, which I thought, okay. I wouldn't listen to this one again, but no, right, I'm fine, it's fine. And of course, you got features, which, well, there might be the main part of this, like, Big Sean, okay, fine. Like, I learned to not be bothered by Big Sean as much. But you really, Jordan Lucas and Russ. I mean, unfortunately, I get Joyner because, well, he had a song called Will way back then, and if you saw Bad Boys 4, he's in there too, playing one of the in a short role. In case you kind of missed it. Oh yeah, also Jane is there too, I just moved past Manny Crunch by him, because, like, I maybe know what he is, but at this point, it's like, you also get appearance from DJ Jesse Jeff in here too, doing his thing, and this time without being thrown down Smoker Field. I mean, it's what I expected to be, and I can't get mad at that rapper in his 50s, maybe 60s, I don't know how old he is, he's probably in his 50s, I will say, he curses, but it could have been worse, remember the early days when he covered a song called Get Lit? Those were the days. I will say that I was slightly better than him doing EDM. But Will Smith. He did an album. It's there. I mean, I wouldn't mean I that wouldn't is there. That's all I got to say about it.
I guess you could say this album doesn't slap.
God damn it.
I had to. It was a layup. That's the one time I'm going to do it.
Okay, fine. I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
It's done. It will never do it again.
Yeah, I mean, it could be worse. It could be worse. I could have covered that fucking Cardi album, which I decided not to do. Because like, you know what? No, it ain't worth it. It ain't worth it. Not for them three Kendrick songs. It ain't worth it. Or two, I don't know. So, yeah, that's it.
That's a good one. All right, so with all that covered now, I suppose that throws it over to me to offer some takes, put some albums on the table, all that business. I'm going to try and keep things as succinct as I can, so let's start with my four highlights for the past month, like my top picks. We're going to start off, of course, with the new Backwash album, Only Dust Remains. So, it's been like a few years since her last record dropped, and I was really looking forward to what this one in particular was doing, because the singles kind of had like this flavor that was similar to like the previous works, but also felt distinctly different. And getting into the full project as a whole, I could say this is easily like her most personal sounding album. It's definitely the most emotionally bleak. Like, it's this very like intense exploration of her own grief, sadness, and just her very intense like negative emotions trying to navigate existence as it feels like the entire world around you is falling apart, because unfortunately a lot of it very much is. And this is even kind of reflected in the production style. Like, there definitely is still like a lot of very sample heavy like essence to the songs and some darker elements, but there's also a lot of bright keyboards and kind of, you know, gospel choir vocals. It's not as coded in, like, horrorcore industrial as, you know, any of her previous records. And I think in a way that kind of helps it feel more human in a way. Because, like I said, this album is pretty much an exploration of personal grief, trauma, and anxiety. And a lot of it still definitely incorporates a lot of very, like, religious, you know, lyrical allusions and allegory. Like, you know, Adam eating the apple, or the summoning of the drummers and trumpets signaling the apocalypse as described in Revelations, all that kind of stuff. So it's a really, really like emotionally compelling listen. In some ways, it might actually be heavier than some of her other works, if not sonically, then again, emotionally. So definitely worth a listen. I give it a very high recommendation. All right, moving on. We have the new Imperial Triumphant album, Gold Star. It always comes back to jazz, doesn't it? But yeah, so these are definitely some of the more distinct guys as far as, like, the extreme metal space and, like, the weird avant-garde side of things, specifically because of all the jazz and, like, the Black and Death. But it's also, they also embody a style that feels very regionally driven. Like, they are based out of New York, and a lot of their music feels like this very dark, twisted, manic version of, like, a night out in the streets of, like, Times Square. And this record is pretty much no different. From the start, a lot of that signature complexity with those is maintained with like those jagged, angular guitar chords, those sick tremolos belting out eerie, ominous melodies amidst the crushing riffs and the bellowing, echo-heavy vocals. The drums have a lot of that driving, frantic energy, as well as the very, very intricate kind of jazz fusion digressions, with that kind of overall sense of technical avant-garde heaviness maintained through the whole album. Though I'd say, while the production definitely has its rawness, songwriting-wise, I think this one has a bit more of a greater clarity of groove in comparison to just how wild and out there some of their previous records could be. And there's definitely quite a lot of notable highlights on here, such as Lexington Delirium, with its melancholic drifting guitar intro, and of course the presence of Thomas Hake from Meshuga. The track Gamora Nouveau, with a lot of those syncopated bass slaps working their way into the back half. And even Hotel Sphinx, which has some of the strongest guitar work on the record. And of course, I gotta shout out Pleasure Dome, because it has not just Thomas Hake as a guest contributor, but even Dave Lombardo. Because, you know, I guess he's got to be doing something while waiting to figure out whether or not Slayer's doing another fucking album. So, yeah, if you need your technical, like, your obligatory yearly dose of very wild avant-garde extreme metal, this is going to do it for you, my friends. Alright, so now let's move on to my third topic here. So, Whitechapel's had an interesting last decade or so, I think. 2016, the album Mark of the Blade was the part where they started introducing full-on clean vocals into the mix, a trend that would continue into their next couple albums. Of course, 2019's The Valley, which I had on my year-end list, kind of just barely scraping by. It was a tough call, but I'll say this, while it wasn't the sonically heaviest album in their catalog, considering where it was pulling from as far as the lyrical inspiration, it's definitely the bleakest record in their discography. I guess you could call it Whitechapel's Black Album in a way. That metaphor made more sense in my head, I swear. But then, of course, that theme continued into 2021's Kin, an album that's pretty much about as melodic as you can get while still technically being a Whitechapel record. I'll admit I didn't think as much of that record as The Valley, mostly because, if I can be a bit derogatory for a second, I think Kin got a bit too close into divorced dad rock territory for my taste. And maybe they were kind of feeling that as well, because maybe they felt like with the trajectory they were on, they went about as far as they could go with the more melodious approach for the time being. Maybe it was because they were nostalgic for about 15 years ago. God, aren't we all? But this particular album, Hymns in Dissonance, of course, is the band's big swerve back into the deathcore trappings of their initial explosion and rise to fame, delivering, you know, another concept record, in this case about a cult leader trying to achieve his goal of gaining power in an alternate dimension. A record that, as a guitarist Alex Wade stated, is, quote, ignorantly heavy. And that's about all you need to know about the experience. This shit hits hard. There's no two ways about it. From the second it hits the opening notes of Prisoner 666 to singles like the title track and A Visceral Wretch, everything is a freight train to the chest straight out of 2011. As if almost like those last couple of albums were conserving like secret power levels or something for a moment like this. I think even for as heavy as they are, they still have a really top-notch sense of songwriting, especially compared to a lot of deathcore scene, with a lot of insane, like, drum runs. Seriously, some of the cymbal patterns on songs like Hate, Cult, Ritual are fucking nuts. Great riffs and heavy breakdowns. And, of course, Phil Bozeman doing some utterly wild shit on the vocals, with some of those gutturals still sounding very otherworldly. Including a lot of sections and songs like I said, the Hymns in Dissonance, the title track, where he basically has to aggressively shout phrases backwards as, like, you know, typical cult incantation type stuff. Tons of groove, thrash and bass, just a relentless sense of chaotic evil energy that never lets up from track to track. It's wild to me that they could still do something like this. And, you know, maybe you might prefer the nuance of the prior two records, but I think a little throwback can be fun every now and then if done just right. And honestly, I think it's kind of important considering, like, the deathcore genre feels like it's in a weird place sometimes. Like, I almost feel like this album could be, like, the great equalizer. Because, okay, maybe you're like me, and you're not really fond of, like, the generic slow-to-mid-tempo single-chord chuck fest of bands like Traitors. Maybe you're like Alex, and you get put to sleep by the symphonic technical wank fest of bands like Lorna Shore. But I think we can all come together, deathcore heads of new and old, all come together, throw on this record, and say, that was pretty freaking sick, bruh. To varying degrees, of course. And then we have... this one pretty much wins the top album of the month by default. I guarantee you, when I get to the year-end wrapped, this is going to be number one, at the very least. So, yeah, y'all hear this band called Spirit Fox? They've been having an interesting last few years, haven't they? Hype steadily building through lots of touring, and of course, hype on social media. High-profile collabs with Megan Thee Stallion will certainly help boost your profile. Of course, there was that new EP of theirs a couple years back. A nice enough sample to tide us over until the release of Tsunami Sea is their next studio effort. And yeah, this one has pretty much just been a constant spin. It's just really scratching a particular itch for me in certain respects. Like, the second it hits the opening of Fata Morgana, that steady chugging detuned guitars mixed in with the pinch harmonics, the slow pounding drum groove, the swap from heavy verses to clean choruses with some of those synthetic walls of, you know, melodic backing. It's a very grand introduction to the record that, of course, is a natural extension of a lot of the territory of Eternal Blue. You have songs like Soft Spine, Black Rainbow, and No Loss, No Love, with plenty of visceral metalcore energy mixing up, you know, slow to mid-tempo chugs and grooves, plenty of dissonant guitar melodies, and of course, just altogether general stink face energy. While songs like Perfect Soul and A Haven with Two Faces lean way more into kind of like their serene, poppier sensibilities, with a great ear for melody through, of course, Cordy's great vocals and the less synthetic arrangements. Pretty much what you get with this album is a very, like, supercharged version of, like, a lot of the best parts of their debut and the intervening EPs. And, of course, the highlight for the record for me overall is the song Keep Sweet, which has some of the best songwriting of the record on average and some of the best of their career, with a lot of its fast-paced verses, the aggressive syncopated guitars, great mix of heavy and melodic, and just some really strong, particularly sinister lyrics in the chorus about tearing someone's heart out and watching it bleed. So, yeah, there is a lot to love about the record. But I'm gonna be a tiny bit nitpicky for just one second, just to prove I'm not a totally biased fanboy. So, I feel like a lot of the album is very front-loaded in a sense. Like, the last three tracks of the record aren't bad, but I noticed those are kind of the songs that I don't think about the most. Pretty much everything after No Loss, No Love, because, God, did you hear that song? That shit fucking kills. And, of course, Courtney LaPlante in general is still a really talented vocalist, but I feel like with the mixing on this record, sometimes her voice is a bit more buried in the mix than I would like. You notice this a lot more with the melodious songs on the record, like Perfect Soul. I guess, because I know she was saying some stuff in some interviews about, like, kind of the state of production in a lot of contemporary metal records. I'm just like, I wonder if she's speaking from experience here. I could be overly conspiratorial in that regard, though. But, yeah, I mean, even with those nitpicks aside, this is the good shit, and you need to be listening to the good shit. So now let's move on to the quick round stuff. So, of course, the first of these, Mark already talked about it, Clipping with Dead Channel Sky. I feel like while this is a good record, in terms of relating to the overall concept, I think the last two Clipping records were stronger horror records than this one is necessarily a cyberpunk record, although it definitely still gives you a lot to chew about in terms of, you know, our relationship to technology, how we define our identities in the digital age, a lot of really, you know, compelling material and subject matter. Although I think in terms of the track pacing, it probably could have cut down on some of the weird interludes, or at the very least just kind of like append those to other tracks to mix it in. Also, I gotta be honest, in the song Code, the ooh-wees sound really silly. Like, I don't want to be that guy, but it reminds me of Mr. Poopy Butthole from Rick and Morty. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Clearly, we need to be reminded less of him and more of the stage play version of him, the more introspective, deep in thought version of the magnanimous fictional character, Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Listen, I'll sit through that as long as I get to sit through more Plumbus explanations. But yeah, I mean, even at the end of the day, I think even a lesser Clipping record is still a thing to behold in the grand scheme of things. Moving on from that, yes, I did in fact listen to the entirety of the Wiggles Country album. It is exactly what it sounds like. It is, well, first of all, it severely exceeds Alex's limitations because it's 32 tracks of Wiggles-themed country tunes.
Oh, God. Wow.
There is a cover of Dolly Parton's 9 to 5 that's about counting from 1 to 5. Dolly Parton herself has two guest features. The Big Red Car is now the Big Red Ute. And there's a song called Friends of Dorothy. Do I have to explain the meaning of that title? Honest question, because I had to have it explained to me.
I'm just wondering why we don't have Utes over here. It's a perfect car. It's a sedan in front and a flatbed on the back. Come on, automakers. You're sitting on money here.
We can't have nice things, unfortunately. Anyway, Stephen Wilson's The Overview, the latest solo offering from the man, is pretty much about as vibes-based of a record that I think I've heard from the guy in a while, and it's pretty good in that regard, bringing back a lot of those quintessential prog rock and kind of space synth elements to create this kind of lush, soaring atmosphere. Good stuff. And then, of course, the new Bloodywood record, New Delhi. It's pretty much an extension of their first record, this time with a lot more emphasis, definitely on the bombastic gent chugs and the soaring melodies, complete with some more electronic synths. It's a fun enough time, I don't mind. Now to a couple of the lowlights here. The fact that Coheed and Cambria still has a career in 2025 feels particularly weird to me, like, just an anomaly. Like, I'm pretty sure when they dropped to The Color Before the Sun back in 2015, that would have been the end of the typical Coheed and Cambria career, or at least the identity as far as, like, doing lore-based concept records. But then 2018 started this whole Vaxxas storyline, and apparently it's gonna be a 5-part story arc. Like, I only just found that out while scribbling down my notes, but, like, I wonder what it says here that even the Amory Wars page on Wikipedia doesn't really note much about the plot of these albums so far, other than they exist. Hell, even if you look up, like, Amory Wars on, like, the fandom wiki, I'm just getting crumbs here trying to figure out what's happening, but again, I'm mostly just here the opinion that, generally speaking, they kind of peaked after the Afterman duology. And all the stuff since then, especially on this record, Vaxxas Act 3 is just, like, running on fumes. Like, everything just feels like it's staving off the inevitable truth that we as a society should have moved on from Coheed and Cambria a while ago. Nothing really sticks in the brain, from the been there, done that, riffing and drums, to, you know, oh boy, is Claudio Sanchez gonna get on the microphone and sound like an emo James LaBrie? He certainly does!
I've never heard that explanation before, but okay, it kind of works.
I'm a little bit sorry about that. But, yeah, there's just not a lot here, meat-wise. Like, and again, if the fandom wikis can't tell you shit about it, I feel like this just isn't clicking for people. And they're still like, oh, it's going to tie into the storylines from before, just you watch. It's just, we really got 2 more albums of this shit. And then, of course, there is the new Def Heaven record, Lonely People with Power. So, their last album from 2021, Infinite Granite, was a pretty contentious record. Okay, that's kind of redundant. I mean, pretty much ever since this band first broke big with Sunbather in 2013, pretty much every record of theirs is technically contentious. But then again, while I'm not, like, a fan of the band much, I tend not to regard the opinions of the true cult crowd as anything worth a shit. Like, look, I'm sorry you're getting really aggro about the trueness of black metal to compensate for the fact that you're never going to get a better job than being a cashier at Advanced Auto Parts, Steve.
Damn.
Sorry, that discourse just annoys me. But yeah, to get back on track, that last record was way more just pure shoegaze. It basically eschewed any of the metal energy they had, and it was certainly a choice. But now we have their new album, Lonely People with Power, which, fun fact, is their debut on Roadrunner Records. And the heavy, unambiguously, is back. This is pretty much as death heaven of a record as you could get, mixing, again, back in the super heavy black metal passages with all the melodic cleans and shoegaze stylings. In a way, kind of feeling like both a sequel to a Sunbather, as well as almost kind of like a greatest hits of their, like a greatest hits collage of their overall sound. In particular, there are a few songs here that kind of have some of the thrashier elements that they were experimenting with on New Bermuda from a decade ago. This still doesn't really do anything for me. I'm just, my response is just, I could listen to Alcest for a better version of this style. I just kind of have to shrug this off as just, it is one of the albums of all time, but I pretty much already know for the crowd that, like, loves this band, like you guys are, you Def Heaven fans are absolutely already having a field day with this record.
I remember when Roadrunner was a big label, and now they're just a name.
They are now one of the labels of all time.
So basically the Def Jam of metal.
You say that, but they were actually part of Island Def Jam for a while until they got sold to Warner Music Group. And, well, let's just say there's a reason why everybody from Roadrunner from the 2000s and 2010s is no longer on Roadrunner. Because, my God, the management in Warner Music Group is just... the recent Todd in the Shadows one-hit wonder. You'll know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, when you lose Slipknot from your label, what the fuck do you really have left? And that's pretty much it for top picks, quick rounds, and lowlights, but here's a category I haven't done in a while. Question mark. The last time I did this was, funnily enough, the last Slipknot album, because I really didn't know what my feelings were about the record. And so now, here we are, once again with another album of just kind of question mark energy. And that is the new Lady Gaga record, Mayhem. Ew. So, yeah, Lady Gaga's still around, still one of the indisputable pop icons of the 21st century. And I'll admit that kind of warms my heart a bit to know that she still got cultural clout, because I feel like it would be wrong to live in a world where people just stopped giving a shit. But of course, the, hype cycle for this one felt particularly sustained, kind of beginning before the album announcement even, with, Die With A Smile being a big chart-topping hit, followed with the ongoing success of Abracadabra in particular. So, yeah, all of that, you know, helping keep her name in the popular consciousness. And, like I said, it's here because I'm still not really sure I get it. Like, okay. Something that I have to point out is that I was reading, like, the Apple Music description, which was quoting an interview she did with, Zane Lowe, you know, Apple Music One, all that business. And she said that, well, I'm not saying directly here, but judging from the sentiment she was saying, I think her intention with this was supposed to be kind of a greatest hits style compilation of, like, her various ideas and motifs from all across her discography. And, I don't know, like, okay, I don't want to call this a bad album, because it is very sonically solid from start to finish, but I still feel like whatever the bigger point was might have gotten mixed up in the album promo. Like, we open with Disease and Abracadabra, which are these grand, big pop spectacle songs that are very dark and dissonant. The latter especially with a lot of those bombastic synths and the weird vocal tics, which... Fun fact, I've been told with some confidence that apparently the chorus of that song is, like, a legitimate, like, you know... like, witch incantation at all. And hell, I actually learned for the first time that the title, like, the word abracadabra, apparently has its roots and origins in Mesopotamia, roughly translating to something like, I create as I speak. And then after those two singles, we get Garden of Eden and Perfect Celebrity, which doesn't really feel like they're extensions of that kind of darker, haughty pop style. But then those darker aspects kind of move a bit to the wayside, and for the most of the rest of the album, we get a lot of retro, new wave, dance pop type stuff. You definitely have, like, these elements of, like, syncopated funk, new wave guitars and songs like Vanish Into You and Zombie Boy, which are decently catchy, and there's also a lot of Michael Jackson influence, and in some of these songs, I hear a lot of synthwave-esque production. Like, my immediate instinct is to think of the dancier songs of Carpenter Brut, like Love Drug and Don't Call Tonight. And if you really need kind of a better clue as to the style, it's worth noting that there is a song here with guest production by none other than Gesoffelstein. So think that kind of synth production. That's probably a better, more relevant comparison. And again, while it's not bad, it feels like a weird place to go from those first four songs on the album. And then we get the last two tracks, Blade of Grass and, of course, Die with a Smile, both of which are these more like acoustic, you know, grand ballads that dissipate with a lot of the synth stuff entirely. And, okay, I could maybe accept Blades of Grass as like a closer, but Die with a Smile, that feels like a studio mandate to me. Like, okay, a brief tangent here. So, does anybody remember when Sam Smith's Unholy became a gigantic viral hit on the internet? And chopped the charts? I mean, how could you forget? I couldn't. I didn't have a choice. And then it actually wound up on their next album. But the thing is, if you listen to that album, Unholy is the opener. And all of the rest is just the same old Sam Smith 6 out of 10 stuff. And so I kind of feel like there's a similar mindset here where the only reason why Die With a Smile was put on the album is because it was a number one hit on the Billboard charts. And it's like, okay, we have this hit. We got to put it on the album so we can milk those streaming metrics for all it's worth. At the end of an album that is very stylistically separate from all of this, all the rest of this stuff. So, yeah, I still don't really get it. Again, it's not bad, but just...
There's one thing I want to add that I've been thinking about this since the album came out and I've listened to all the tracks. There is something to be said about how much influence a producer can have over an album when they're also one of the primary songwriters, in this case, Andrew Watt. Because he is credited on every single track on this album, along with various other writers, and even Gesoffelstein on a couple songs. But I hear those guitar parts. I know that's a trait. It's what he did with Miley Cyrus a couple years ago. It's what he did with Ozzy Osbourne a couple years ago. This is his style. I don't think it works for contemporary pop. Like if he wants to be branch out into like alternative stuff, like with like be like a harder Jack Antonoff, he can do that. But I just don't think this melding of the minds really worked. Like if you hear like a Max Martin produced and written song, you know what that's like. And he can work with, you know, various artists and singers and groups and whatever. It's identifiable, but it's never, it never comes across as overly cliche. Andrew Watt has basically two gimmicks, and he's been using it ever since he got big from that Miley Cyrus album, and it just didn't work here. Like, less of that, more Gesoffelstein, and we'd be saying a much different story on this album.
Yeah, I think that's a solid enough lesson we can learn from this. But, yeah, that pretty much covers all of my thoughts on all the albums I made sure to prioritize this past month. Of course, there'll be the playlist down in the description, so you can hear whatever tunes we think are most interesting, so you can make up your minds about certain albums. Of course, you know where to follow us, through a resolution on Blue Sky, SuroResolution.com. Yada, 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 sign out, all that business. So, thank you for tuning in this week. I'm not sure when I'm going to get this post. Hopefully by, like, Sunday or Monday. It might cut into... I might be cutting it really close with whenever we do the next regular episode, but... Yeah, so thank you for listening. We will see you all again next time. And until then... Sammy Guevara has a very stupid face, and I do not like it.
Agreed.